thanks for joining us and supporting Vicky Doe Fitness. We ask for your continued support by becoming an It's All About Health and Fitness premium member. Go to www.vickidoefitness.com/join. Again, that's www.vickidoefitness.com/join and register for a $6 monthly subscription. And remember, keep listening, sharing, and checking us out.
The views and opinions expressed are for general informational purposes only. Consult with your physician or medical health care provider for medical advice, diagnosis, and/or treatment.
Today, we are taking a closer look at alcohol. Are we drinking a little too much? Are we better off but not drinking at all? We are so excited to have Rui Fairburns, the co-founder of the movement One Year No Beer, joining us today to inspire us to take the challenge and break away, take a sabbatical, so to speak, from alcohol, and to see what positive changes can happen in our lives. 1 year, no beer. It is changing lives every moment and every day. All this and more on It's All About Health and Fitness.
Welcome to It's All About Health and Fitness with Dr. Vicky Hayward Doe and Dr. Virginia Banks Bright. This program is brought to you by Vicky Doe Fitness, a multimedia health and wellness forum. Now here's your host, Vicky Doe and D. Banks Bright.
I'm Dr. Vicky Hayward Doe, and with me is the one and only Dr. Virginia D. Banks Bright.
Vicky, it's been a minute.
It has been a minute.
It has been a minute.
But, you know, the weather has been very good to
weather
us.
Weather has been very good. You know, it's very unseasonable, as they say, not very fallish type weather. But you know what?
Mm-hmm.
I'm good with that.
Yes.
Because, you know, I saw the other day I was in mm-hmm. my driveway mm-hmm. a woolly bear.
Yes.
Which means,
what does
use
that mean?
It heralds that snow is coming kind of soon.
Well, shoot, we ain't got to see a woolly bear to know that snow is coming soon.
We live here. I was like, there's a woolly bear.
Snow is always coming, lurking
really
around
is.
The corner.
And you know, the last two winters, we've been kind of lucky.
Yes.
We've been a
that
little bit
true.
Lucky.
That
you know, I noticed because I haven't had to pay my, you know, the guy to dig out my driveway.
Oh, okay,
and
for the
stuff
snow stuff,
right.
The snowmobile.
Yeah, right.
Oh, well, we will wait.
I'll just appreciate what
and
we
appreciate.
Have for now.
I yeah. know. Well, today we are going to take a closer look at alcohol. Now, when we think about alcohol consumption, it is all around us, and it is definitely a habit for some of us. We drink to celebrate. We drink to socialize. We drink to fit in. Some of us drink to relax. I think I do drink for relaxation.
Yeah, I do too.
A little glass
a little
of wine,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Right, for relaxation.
Yeah.
But are we really putting our health at risk? Do we drink a little too much?
I don't know.
It's time for us to confess up, right,
it really
T?
It's time for us to fess up. Yeah, yeah. This is going to be a good show today.
This is definitely mm-hmm. going to be mm-hmm. a good show. Mm-hmm. Now, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, drinking too much is not good for our health. Research has shown that excessive alcohol use led to approximately 88,000 deaths and 2.5 million years of potential life loss each year in the United States from 2006 to 2010. And it shortened the lives of those who died by an average of 30 years. Also, excessive drinking was responsible for 1 in 10 deaths among working age adults aged 20 to 64 years. The economic costs of excessive alcohol consumption in 2010 was estimated, well, $249 billion.
Wow.
Or $2.05 a drink.
Mm.
Wow.
Can't find a drink for that.
No. Here's the thing. And what I want us to think about, yes, a lot of us may not have a so-called drinking problem. However, new research is showing that alcohol consumption increases our risk over time for certain cancers, such as breast cancer, colon cancer, and chronic diseases. Most especially as we age. And for women, alcohol affects us differently as well. Some of us are just better off not drinking at all. We feel better, we are more productive, and our quality of life increases tremendously. Today, we have with us Rui Fairbairns. He's an entrepreneur, senior oil broker, and co-founder of the 1 Year No Beer Movement. He's transforming lives for many folks around the world by convincing them to take the alcohol-free challenge to change their mindset about alcohol. And he is joining us to tell us more about this life-changing moment and movement. I said moment, life-changing moment. But that kind of, that's pretty good.
It was a moment, though, too, I would imagine, for him.
Yeah.
You know, to make a, have a, all of a sudden.
Have that aha moment.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
That's it.
Exactly.
We are just excited that he is here, and he will tell us why we should take a serious look at alcohol in our lives and take the alcohol-free challenge as well. Now, I want all of you guys, I want you to make sure you go to our website, www.vickidofitness.com, and sign up for our newsletter, because we send out health tips and updates for all of our listeners. And we want to keep you up to date on all the things that we're doing here at Vicky Doe Fitness as well. So don't forget, make sure you go on iTunes and like our podcast show. Go ahead and like our Vicky Doe Fitness Facebook page, and make sure you give us great and awesome reviews. And as always, we want to
thank you, thank you, thank you for your support.
Thank you, thank you. Well, Dee, we were talking about that we love the weather now in Northeast Ohio.
I know.
Even though we're having good weather, it seems like, man, there's so many hurricanes.
Crazy. It's been crazy. Coming in salvos.
I know.
Maria and Irma and Jose.
And all the, yes.
All of them coming like back to back. I mean, people can't even catch their breath before another hurricane is coming. You know.
I know.
And San Juan, Puerto Rico.
Yes. And then the earthquake.
Earthquakes. It's just been, and you know, there's some islands.
Uh-huh.
Like I was talking to some friends. I'd never been to Barbuda.
There's yes.
Friends that have been to Barbuda. It's completely destroyed.
Yeah, it's wiped out.
St. Martin that I've been to.
Mm-hmm.
Not completely destroyed, but destroyed. Mm-hmm. Like, you mm-hmm. know, the way it was probably will never be again.
Never be.
And a lot of these islands got, and it's interesting that Jamaica didn't get hit.
I know.
But, you know, these mm-hmm. islands along the pathway of those hurricanes, I mean, just devastated. When you see the pictures of Puerto Rico, and, you know, Puerto Rican individuals are Americans.
I know.
You know, they're our brothers and sisters, and see they're not getting water and food. I'm thinking, but these are United States citizens.
I know.
So it's just mm-hmm. been very, very not just interesting to watch. I don't even want to put it in that kind of context. I'm just hoping that, you know, I keep watching the news every day. Of course, you don't know what to believe with the news. But I do have some friends that are Puerto Rican that I talk to or see on Facebook and so forth. And it's pretty devastating. A lot of them have not heard from their family members still.
I know.
Because in some of the areas of Puerto Rico, you know, the cell towers are out.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So our prayers and stuff just go
definitely.
To the people in Puerto Rico and all the islands where it's affected. And then the awful earthquake in Mexico City. You know, Mexico City is on this earthquake fault anyway. So
I know.
Eek, I don't know about traveling to Mexico City.
Because you never know.
They have a lot of earthquakes there.
Yeah, you never know.
But it just seems like bad weather is all around.
Big time.
Like,
and it's scary.
Global warming.
Yes.
I think if you don't believe in global warming, something's wrong with
you. I know, but it's a lot of people trying to poo-poo that.
Yeah, no. I just, you know.
That's crazy.
It's just like right there in your face.
That's it.
So, yeah.
But all we can do is just try to help.
Yeah.
You know, they have different organizations that
right.
we can donate.
And legitimate ones where
yes.
the money is actually going to where the people are.
Yes.
You know, and a lot of people, I've heard another thing, that a lot of people are moving from Puerto Rico to the United States to never, ever return.
Oh, I know.
But they can't return to the devastation of their homes because they don't, first of all, they don't have the resources that we do or the infrastructure to be able to kind of like build things back. You know, if that happened in the United States, first of all, there'd be mass rioting about why is it we have to do without electricity for a day, much less for 3 or 4 months.
Can you imagine?
Mm-mm.
That's crazy.
Mm-mm.
But yes, we definitely have to put our prayers up for them.
Yeah.
And all of the ones who are suffering through weather. And see, weather, you can't control it.
No.
So you just, you just got to go and deal with it.
No, nothing you can do.
You have to deal with it. I've been busy just doing my thing.
Yeah, me too.
Trying to keep up. And
yeah, me too. Me
so,
too.
So, but I don't know.
Yeah, you were Halloween decor. Do you have your Halloween decorations up yet?
No. I thought maybe you, because I don't celebrate Halloween.
Like my son says, Mom, there's two answers for that. No and not really. No and not really.
Yeah,
I don't celebrate Halloween.
No. The only time I celebrated Halloween was when the girls were little, you
know,
to give out the candies. Yes.
And give out the cup. But other than that, no.
No, because I'd be scared for real.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I don't, things have changed too. I mean, you know, you don't know. It's not the same as when we were growing up. You know, people take the opportunity to do bad things on Halloween and people run around with these weird clown face things, you know, the mean clown faces.
Yeah.
So, no, I just keep my door closed and locked, lights off. You know, and it used to be kids would just stay in their own neighborhood. Now you have cars coming.
I know.
People caravans of people coming in the neighborhood from X neighborhood, this neighborhood.
I know.
Going up and down. And, but it, that's just not supposed, you're not supposed to walk to each other's house. You're not supposed to get in a bus and come in a bus and get out in the neighborhood and walk around and get candy and then move. It's just totally different than when I remember.
I know. It did. No, sorry.
No, I'm not.
No, no.
Pass. Pass.
That's exactly it.
Just pass.
I can't
That's
do
all
it.
I can say.
I know. No. I know. But the pumpkins are nice. You know, you put some little pumpkins.
I do have
out.
A pumpkin on a stump.
Yeah.
That's about it. There's a pumpkin on a stump right near my driveway. Way. And that's about all you that's get it. This Halloween. That's about all you get. I'm sorry.
But that's
pumpkin.
A shame. That's a shame when Halloween night, everybody, turn off the lights, turn off the lights.
My door is locked.
We aren't home.
Lights
aren't
are
home.
Off.
What?
Lights are off. Back in that back room. No.
I know.
Can't
I know.
Do it anymore.
That's something.
Times have changed.
Times have changed.
No, I mean, they bring caravans of cars and
what?
Buses over there with kids from, you know, other neighborhoods coming around in droves and getting candy. That's not right. It's not supposed to be like that.
You'd be supplying the whole neighborhood
with candy. I know, right. You know, you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to walk from home.
But they
to
wouldn't
home.
Come to my house too long because I give them some fresh fruit and vegetables.
They would come back.
They would
to
come
your
back.
House.
So how was your week? You know, you were doing the traveling.
Yeah.
Remember
so,
you,
yeah.
You were doing all those good things.
Yeah.
Conferences.
Yeah. And some conferences on health and wellness kind of conferences and stuff. Mm-hmm. But still looking forward to, in, you know, several weeks mm-hmm. on the Marine Corps 10K in Washington,
yes.
D.C. So trying
yes.
to get ready for that and mm-hmm. so forth. So
what
yeah.
about the Black Caucus? Did you go to that?
I did. And uh-huh. that was really good. The Congressional mm-hmm. Black Caucus. The Lynx gave awards to, I believe it was 6 or 7 women who are members of the Congressional Black Caucus, gave mm-hmm. them awards.
Okay.
And so that was a sold out event. My sister, who's the, as you know, the national president, mm-hmm. it was a great luncheon. And this was their inaugural luncheon and it was sold out. And then that afternoon, she had a public forum on What's Up, Doc, just talking about mm-hmm. getting minorities into medical school.
Yeah.
Because there's a doctor shortage. I mean, there's a global doctor. I mean, there's a doctor shortage in the United States, but there's also a diversity doctor shortage. So mm-hmm. she had the deans from Meharry, Morehouse,
okay.
Howard, and Drew to
okay.
come and talk about
yes.
the perils of, you know, getting young men, particularly African-American men in the medical school and having them to apply. So it was good. Mm. Yeah, it was very well attended, standing room only. So, yeah, and I wish I could have stayed. Wish I could have stayed for the rest of the... Next year, I'm thinking about maybe taking, because they had a lot of other forums
stuff going
during
on,
the
huh?
weekend. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Culminating in the dinner that evening. So next year, I'll probably stay a little bit longer.
Okay, well, mm-hmm. that sounds good.
Yeah,
that
yeah, it
sounds
was good.
Definitely good. So what is going on this week?
Well, I do want to just kind of mention a new outbreak
okay.
of another disease. You know how we usually are on the top of things with
okay.
outbreaks. We had Ebola and then
right.
we had Zika.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's an outbreak of the plague in Madagascar, which is an island off of the coast of, I believe it's off the coast. My geography is terrible, but Africa.
Explain to folks what the plague is.
So the plague is a disease that's carried by rats, rodents.
Mm.
And I'm not sure that they know, you know, all the epidemiology of it, but they're struggling to contain a widespread and deadly outbreak of this plague since it broke out in Madagascar in August. The plague goes back to the Middle Ages,
mm-hmm.
when they lost like thousands and thousands of people because of uncleanly places and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And every now and then in the United States, you see an outbreak every now and then, one or two cases out west. But in Madagascar already, they've had at least 45 deaths have been attributed to the outbreak, with more than 385 confirmed cases reported in 27 of the country's 114 districts. The outbreak is worrisome because a majority of the confirmed illnesses include the pneumonic plague, which can be transmitted through the air.
Whoa.
So when you start getting infectious diseases that are that's sort of like the bird flu.
Mm-hmm.
When one of my professors, I'll never forget, at a meeting, maybe it was about 7 or 8 years ago, and he got up at this big conference and he said, well, somebody asked him, what's the infectious disease that frightens you the most? And he said, bird flu, because when you start having things that are spread respiratory, it doesn't take long for 4 or 5 people to get infected from one person or 10 people from that. So this pneumonic plague, which can be transmitted through the air when an infected person coughs, and is 100% fatal if left untreated. So, yeah. So, you know, World Health Organization is down there scrambling, and they don't want another, you know, Ebola situation where they waited too little too late. So we'll have to keep on top of that to see how
big time,
see how things are coming out along with that. Place. So,
Wow.
Just infectious diseases.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
Just for everybody out there, get your flu shot. Get your flu shot.
Oh, yeah, it's that time.
Get your flu shot. It's time to get your flu shot, your flu vaccination, either at your drugstore or your place of business.
Mm-hmm.
And the new guidelines now are that it's for anyone over the age of 6 months.
Okay, there. Then that's everybody,
that's
right?
That's everybody. And so now they have new formulations. So no longer can you say, I can't take the vaccine because I'm allergic to eggs. So they have a non-egg formulation
now. Okay.
And, you know, you can't say because I had an itch on my left toe, I don't want to take the flu vaccine. No, because my second thumb swole up. No. Mm-mm.
No excuses.
No excuses. No. They have a flu vaccine now for everybody.
There you go. So let's go get them.
So let's go get it. Yep.
That's it. Let's go get our flu shot. Well, the National Health Observances has declared September as Fruits and Veggies.
Yay.
Yeah. More Matter Month. The more we eat, the better. Eating fruits and vegetables has many health benefits, and people who eat a healthy, balanced diet with plenty of fruits and vegetables can help lower their risk for heart disease, type 2 diabetes, some types of cancer, obesity, high blood pressure. Communities, health professionals, businesses, and families can work together to encourage people to eat more fruits and vegetables. To make a difference, you need to spread the word about tips for healthy eating and encourage communities, organizations, families, and individuals to get involved. So how can Fruits and Vegetables, More Matters Month, make a difference? We can use this month to raise awareness about the importance of getting enough fruits and vegetables. And like I say, we need to be talking about fruits and vegetables every month.
We do. It shouldn't just be one month.
It shouldn't be just one
every month. Every week, every day.
That's it. Mm-hmm. Because of the health benefits. Mm-hmm. So to find more about this, go to healthfinder.gov.
Right.
All right, Dee, we were talking about Ken Burns and his
news. And I taped it. And not only did I tape it, I broke down. I went into Barnes & Noble and I had a couple of coupons and I bought the box series. This was a documentary series that the famous Ken Burns, who did Civil War 10 or 12 years ago. And, you know, he's done a lot of other, I think he did one on jazz, but a wonderful documentary person, director, whatever. He put out this wonderful series on the Vietnam War. And I didn't see every single one of them, but I saw several of them. And I hope to go back and start at number one. I guess this was my era.
Okay.
And a lot of the era of some of my friends, who served in Vietnam. And it was just kind of interesting to hear some of the comments on Facebook from some of them about, I know for me, a lot of things to me were revealed at how much was hidden. I mean, like how much the people didn't know. And, you know, there were a lot of protests back then about the Vietnam War and about how, you know, it shouldn't have been. And, you know, kind of as it, I think one of the upshots, I think, is we've learned that we were lied to a lot with respect to this. And that maybe those protests were not all wrong. I mean, I don't think that we should have treated the Vietnam veterans like we did. But the reason that we were there and the reason that those boys went over there, I think we lost like 50-some thousand men. Have you been to the Vietnam Wall in Washington, D.C. yet?
Yes. The girls? I know. Yes. Every time we do go to D.C., we walk around the major memorial park and do that. Because, you know, my brother Bill, my dad, he's a veteran. He was Coast Guard.
Oh, right.
During the Vietnam War.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, you know, all those men up there, and it got rave reviews, and I just think everybody that remembers that era just kind of sitting back and reflecting on what was truth and what wasn't truth.
I know. I don't know. Unfortunately, when we look back, there's always something that comes out that was pushed under the
rug. We didn't
know. And we didn't know.
And it started during the Kennedy era, you know, and passed through the, you know, various presidents and stuff. And it just kind of lets you know that all these behind the scene backroom deals that are being made where people's lives are put in jeopardy.
I know.
And, you know, these boys went over there. Many of them were 18, 19 years old. And I remember, again, like, because I said it was my era. Every man that I know that was in college with me, when we all talk now, they all know their draft number. If you talk to any of the guys that are my era and my age, what's your draft number? Well, it was 64. What's your draft number? It was 24. Because if you weren't in college and you had a low draft number, you were going to Vietnam. And so the guys in college, you know, many of them were trying to scramble around and try to figure out what to do. And, I mean, there were a lot of people who got deferments for whatever. But a lot of the guys, I remember one guy in that was 3 years ahead of me, he ended up being a pilot and was shot down, was one of the first African-American pilots, or pilots, rather. He happened to be African-American that was shot down. So all of us baby boomers watched this with, you know, like we all remember the protests and stuff that went on. Kent State.
Yes.
You know, your school and stuff. So there was a lot of protests during that Vietnam era.
Died. You know, even the protesters, you know, because especially with Kent State, you know, with the students.
Right. That song, Four Dead in Ohio. The music was spot on.
I mean,
he had music to match all the 60s and 70s. I mean, it was really, really good. So, yeah, it was great.
It's good, though, to look at. I love looking at documentaries so that I can look at the history, you know.
Absolutely.
Especially when they're really good.
Absolutely.
So you know.
And like you say, you know, what stuff is pushed under the carpet and deals behind closed doors and stuff. You never know until 50 years later.
You never know. But yeah, so the latest is, you know, they're talking about Oprah.
Have you seen her? Did you see her?
I didn't see that segment, but I saw
about it. She was debuting this coming Sunday.
And the 60 Minutes, she said that she used to love the notion that she would be able to be on 60 Minutes.
Wow.
You know, that she, right.
Did she sleep?
I don't know, because she just doing. And then I heard she's getting ready. Is she really getting back to where she's going to have her actual show again?
I don't know. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I heard that.
I mean, I look at that magazine that she has, and that's got to be a full-time job just in and of itself.
I know.
And then her own network, trying to keep that up, and then her show. When does she sleep?
I don't know.
That's a lot of stress, pressure.
That is, but she loves
she's
it.
She's juggling all the balls, though.
I know. She loves it. Yeah. She said, yeah, she's been a big admirer of 60 Minutes since her days as a young reporter.
Good for her.
So now, I guess her dream has come
true. Yeah, well, I mean, there are a lot of good reporters that came through there. That was one of my shows that I really
enjoyed. Yeah, I used to love Ed Bradley. Remember him?
Me too.
He was good. I used to love watching him.
Me too. Me too.
Yeah, so yeah, you're right. A lot of folks have come through that. So kudos to her.
Yeah.
She just does, I guess, special stories and so forth.
Good
so
her.
That'll be good. Yeah, that'll good be good. Her. Let's talk about the CTE.
Yeah.
Did you see? I think I put that article for us to look at.
Yeah, I kind of like this article. The latest is a potential marker or warning sign for a devastating brain disease caused by repeated concussions has been identified in living people for the first time by researchers, because heretofore you could only make that diagnosis at death. And I can't remember, there was a football player who just recently died. I think he was the one who was committed suicide and they found out that he had CTE. But until now, it's only been possible to diagnose it after death through autopsy, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, CTE. Mm-hmm. But scientists in Boston studied the brains of 23 former college and professional football players, 59 athletes with Alzheimer's disease, and 18 non-athletes without brain disease. Levels of the biomarker CCL11 were normal in the brains of the non-athletes without brain disease and the non-athletes with Alzheimer's disease, but were significantly elevated in the brains of former football players with CTE. In the former players with CTE, there was a link between the number of years playing football and levels of CCL11. Mm-hmm. Not only did this research show the potential for CTE diagnosis during life, but it also offers a possible mechanism for distinguishing between CTE and other diseases, said the first author on this article, Jonathan Cherry, who's a postdoc fellow in neurology at Boston University Medical Center. By making it possible to distinguish between normal individuals with Alzheimer's and CTE, therapies can be more targeted and directed to be more effective, he said. Further research is needed to determine if elevated levels of CCL11 occur early or late in the CTE disease process, and whether CCL levels might be able to predict the severity of the brain disease. Yeah, there it is. Aaron Hernandez is the one who, the former New England
Patriots,
who committed suicide while found in prison. He had a severe case of CTE. More than 100 National Football League players have been posthumously diagnosed with CTE. The new study was published September the 26th in the journal PLOS-1. Mm-hmm. The findings of this study are the early steps toward identifying CTE during life. Once we can successfully diagnose it in living individuals, we're much closer to directing treatments or discovering treatments from those who suffer from it, said senior author Dr. Anne McKee, director of the CTE Center at Boston University. And isn't that where that movie was, that the guy who was from Africa?
Wasn't
he in Boston?
I think so.
They made a movie out of it.
Yeah. Yes.
And just vaguely remembering.
And then Will Smith played his part?
Yeah, I think so. Right.
The doctor.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
So it's very good to see that they're starting to discover the markers, the biomarkers.
Right.
I don't know with the way football is, I don't know if that will stop anything.
I don't know either. But at least some moms early on with they might have some influence over their youngsters.
I know.
If they have some elevated, or maybe wives or whatever, to maybe tell them to come on out of there.
I know.
Is it worth it?
Is it worth it? I know.
Is it worth it in the long run?
Yeah, or at least make a short career out
Right.
of it.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was definitely interesting. Well, today, we're taking a closer look at alcohol. And new research has shown that alcohol consumption increases our risk over time for certain cancers such as breast cancer, colon cancer, and chronic diseases, most especially as we age. And for women, like we have discovered and research has said and shown, that it affects us differently. There are short-term risks and long-term risks for alcohol consumption, and maybe we should think about our alcohol consumption. Are we drinking too much? Should we quit altogether to reap the benefits? Well, today we have with us Rui Fairbairns, the co-founder of the movement One Year No Beer. Don't you like that name?
I love it.
Yes.
I love it.
This is a movement that admonishes people to take the alcohol-free challenge to improve their quality of life. He will share with us today his story and the steps to take so that we can join him and his movement and take the challenge. And he will definitely share with us all this information later on in the show. But first, let's talk a little bit about alcohol. And when I read this, Dee, and I was looking up the research mm-hmm. about from the Centers for Disease mm-hmm. Control and mm-hmm. Prevention, mm-hmm. I was just really taken aback about what is excessive drinking. Because when I thought about it, I was like, well, shoot, all of us might be excessive drinkers.
Eek. You know, they always say when you, in medicine, we used to say it was like you're an alcoholic when you drink more than your doctor.
Oh, that's a good one. I love that.
Yep, you're an alcoholic when you drink more than your doctor drinks. So yeah.
So
but I'm like, looking at these numbers too, and they're you know pretty alarming.
I know. Excessive drinking, and that includes binge drinking, heavy drinking, and any drinking by a pregnant woman or people younger than age 21. So that's what it includes. So binge drinking, the most common form of excessive drinking, is defined as consuming, for women, four or more drinks during a single occasion. For men, five or more drinks during a single occasion. And heavy drinking is defined as consuming, for women, eight or more drinks. But this is eight or more drinks per week. So think about that.
Eek.
I know. Eight or more drinks per week. And for men,
that's a one drink a day.
That's
or
it.
Two a day.
That's it.
That's deep.
And that's heavy drinking.
That's deep.
Isn't that something?
That's deep.
So, and then for men, 15 or more drinks
per week.
Most people, and this is what they made sure to highlight, mm-hmm. it says, CDC said that most people who drink excessively are not alcoholics or alcohol dependent.
Hmm.
Now think about that.
That's interesting, because some people would say, well, yeah, you are.
Right.
I mean, that's interesting that they would say that, because some people would say if you're drinking that much, yeah, you're kind of dependent on alcohol, because it does have a, I don't know if it's addicting, but I think it has a habitual.
And that's it. It's a habit.
A habit. Right.
It's
that you
habit.
Want a glass of wine and the next day you're going to want another glass of wine. There's something that draws you to it.
So with that statement, that would make sense. And we're going to listen more to Rui when mm-hmm. he talks. Mm-hmm. Since we really are not alcohol dependent, we just have that habit.
Mm-hmm.
So now we got to break that habit
right.
of having that one drink or two
exactly.
drinks. Yeah.
Right.
So I thought that
right.
was very interesting.
Right.
So what is moderate drinking? The Dietary Guidelines for Americans defines moderate drinking as up to one drink per day for women and up to two drinks per day for men. In addition, the dietary guidelines do not recommend that individuals who do not drink alcohol start drinking for any reason. However, there are some people that just should not drink any alcohol, and those include folks that are younger than age 21, pregnant or may be pregnant, if you're driving, planning to drive, if you're participating in any type of activity that requires skill or coordination, suffering from certain medical conditions,
taking over-the-counter meds,
yes,
which is a biggie,
that can interact with alcohol, recovering from alcoholism, or are unable to control the amount that they drink. These are the people that should not really be drinking at all. What are the short-term health risks for drinking excessive alcohol? Injuries. And we know about that.
Big time.
Injuries.
You big know, time.
Motorcycle crashes,
right.
vehicle
right.
crashes,
right.
drowning.
Right.
See, that's, you know, a lot of drownings
yeah.
happen.
People do stupid stuff. They're drunk and they get into
yes.
the water and they can't swim. And then the undertow comes and.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So then violence,
mm-hmm.
you know, those are short-term health risks. Risky sexual behaviors.
Yeah. And that's another thing, because alcohol lowers your inhibitions.
Yes.
And so people are more willing to engage in high risk sexual behavior when they drink a lot.
That's it. Then, of course, you know, miscarriage can happen. Mm-hmm. Long-term health risks, and this is what I thought was very interesting, because...
And don't forget about the fetal alcohol syndrome with the... Well, that's yes. short-term, but long-term, that's short and long.
Among pregnant women, you'd be surprised. A lot of women that are pregnant still drink.
It's just amazing, like taking drugs too.
Yes.
I just don't get it.
I know.
I just don't get it.
Yeah, but it still happens.
It's still happening.
It still happens. Yes, yes. So there are long-term health risks, and this is what I thought was interesting over time, because we never think about it. Drinking too much, it can lead to the development of chronic diseases such as high blood pressure.
Right.
Heart disease, stroke, all of these. Mm-hmm. Cancer of the breast, mouth, throat, learning and memory problems, including dementia, social problems. Family problems, we know about some of these and heard of some of them. Mental health problems, depression, alcohol dependence. So those are the long-term health risks of drinking. But not drinking too much, you can reduce the risk by not drinking too much. You can reduce the risk of these short and long-term health risks. But let's think about it. Maybe we should think about taking a break, you know, a sabbatical.
Right. And I think, you know, some... arenas, some things are trying to minimize excessive alcohol use. Like, I know a lot of the colleges are no longer serving alcohol at some of the games, and tailgate parties, you're not allowed to bring alcohol in some of those venues. And I just kind of see all around some venues trying to minimize the amount of alcohol that people, because, you know, the airlines, I think they're going to have to eventually come to terms with that, because so many rage things happen on planes with people drinking a lot of alcohol.
Yes.
And especially on these long distance flights where your alcohol consumption is unlimited until you land.
Yeah, and if you're on a 14-hour trip,
you'll blitz by the time you get there. So I think that the airlines is going to have to really, you know, just look at it a little bit, because, you know, first of all, you don't want to punish everybody because of the wrongdoings of one person. But and then I also noticed that for parties, I don't think people drink as much as they used to, because the police are not playing anymore with DUIs.
No, they're not.
And so you're going to jail.
That's it.
I think women have to be mindful of the fact that depending on how much you weigh, you know, one drink or two drinks, you could blow over the limit. As opposed to, you know, three or four by somebody else. One drink, if you weigh 90 pounds, may be enough to blow you over the limit. So nobody wants to have that. So I've just kind of noticed that, you know, thank goodness for Uber and Lyft and all these other things. But these are all the, you know, ramifications. So you're right. Maybe we should think about,
you know, I do that periodically.
Yeah.
Have what I call a dry month
where
I'm just not drinking any alcohol.
And I think for women too, the other thing is that you're drinking sugar.
Yes, yes.
If you're thinking about a weight loss or weight control thing, you know, the increased incidence of it just forming around your gut when you're drinking a lot of alcohol. And I would venture to say, if you stop drinking, you probably drop 2 or 3 pounds.
Oh, big
don't
time.
You think?
Oh, yeah.
I've seen it in myself.
Well, that's why we always, when we do a weight loss program, especially here.
That's why you can't drink.
At Vicky Doe Fitness, when we get serious and we do a weight loss program, we tell people that at least for the first 2 to 3 weeks, you cannot drink alcohol.
Derails it.
Yes.
Completely derails your program.
Yes, it does. Just the health benefits.
Right.
And especially if you don't drink, you don't have to worry about waking up with hangovers and all that.
Exactly.
You just feel better. Yeah. So I think it's going to be very good that we listen. We listen to our guest.
Can't wait.
Rui Fairborn.
He's from across the pond, right?
Yes, he is from London. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And he's going to tell us, you know, just at least get us started on how we can take the challenge with him. 1 year, no beer. And so let's listen to the interview at this time. Here with us today, we have with us Rui Fairbairns. He's an entrepreneur. He's a senior oil broker and co-founder of the 1 Year No Beer Movement. And he has helped over 25,000 members in 120 countries transform their lives by taking their science back 28, 90, and 365-day alcohol-free challenges to change their mindset around alcohol. Now, he is with us today to share his story and give us tips on how we can join the 1 year no beer movement challenge today. So how you doing, Rory?
Awesome. Yeah, thank you very much, Vicky and Dee, for having me on. I'm excited.
You're so welcome.
Yes, we are excited to have you here as well. We want to start out by asking you to tell your story. What made you decide to give up alcohol and start this fantastic movement, 1 year no beer?
I've got to say it chose me rather than I chose it, but we'll talk about that later.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, so a bit of background. So originally I'm from the west coast of Scotland, a beautiful island. Not very many people, you know, everybody knows each other. And like many places all over the world, but certainly in Scotland, we love a drink up there. And, you know, I've been watching my older peers, family members, uncles, aunties, you know, celebrate, commiserate, and congratulate with alcohol since, I don't know, by the time I was a toddler, much like the rest of us, you know, it's kind of ingrained in us. And, you know, pretty excitable upbringing, good fun there. I left the island when I was about 16 years old, and I pursuing an entrepreneurial career. If that's the same thing. No, that's a bit of a contract in terms, isn't it?
Right.
And work hard, play hard has always been my mantra. And I sort of realized that, you know, if you can take clients out and entertain them and they think you're a stand-up guy, then you end up getting the business. And usually that means drinking. So there's this sort of recurring theme coming through. And it wasn't until I found myself down in London working as an oil broker. I picked up the job very randomly, bumping into a guy while I was in an island called Ibiza, Party Island, where everybody goes to party very hard.
I know that movie star.
And he got me
the
job as a broker, and it was when really the two worlds properly collided between working hard, business, and playing hard, and that's exactly what the broking role is.
So you played hard.
And,
huh?
You know, I thrived at it. I was very, very good at taking people out. I guess in the early days of being a broker, I sort of told people I was paid to get them out and get them drunk, because that was such an important part of the job.
Mm-hmm.
And I never, you know, just to quantify, I was never that person who was carrying on at home on their own. You know, I didn't have a problem with alcohol per se.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't, you know, I wasn't drinking at work. Well, I wasn't sipping my fit flask at work, let's just say.
But,
you know, it's just normal high-pressure job, social, drinking. And since then, I found out that this is, you know, so widespread problem. And, you know, I met my lovely wife in London, and we got married, and we had our first kid. And all of a sudden, you know, not all of a sudden, but I guess it just started to wear a bit thin. You know, maybe once a week or once every fortnight, I might come home at 3 o'clock in the morning, having, you know, pretty much been drunk since lunchtime. And, you know, that would start to wear a bit thin. And it was causing these sort of friction in my life. And so I decided one day to prove my wife wrong, that alcohol was not the problem in our relationship. I said, fine, that's it. I'm going to give up alcohol for 90 days as part of an anger management program. And I was taking the anger management program because I felt that she had too much anger. You know, that whole, or be the change you want to see in the world, right? So that's what I was trying to act out. And so I stopped drinking. And when I did, I just was, my mind was blown. I didn't realize how suppressed my life was. I thought I was fine. I thought I was, you know, getting on great. But when I took alcohol out, I just felt incredible. I lost a ton of weight. I felt so much better about life. I got my energy back. I started this 1 year no beer movement in my spare time. I, you know, we practically rebuilt our house, which I project managed. I had another child, and, you know, just had so much energy, so much productivity, felt more in line, felt happier and healthier, that I realized, you know what, I'm going to have to do something about this. And I got together with another broker in London, and we used to work together, and he'd also stopped drinking 6 months.
Okay.
And we said, look, there's something massive here that people are missing. The fact is that when you stop drinking, life gets so much better. It's massive changes in people's lives. So we said, let's get together and let's create something which sort of tricks people into doing it. Because nobody really wants to give up alcohol, right? It's fun. It loosens you up. It's what everybody does. We're all conditioned to do it. You know, everybody really wants that, but it's the downsides, it's afterwards, and the regret and the anxiety and the depression and all those things we don't want. So let's create a challenge, which can be something you can be proud of. You can walk into the pub and say, look, I'm doing this challenge and I'm proud of it. And it gives you a sort of break. And during that break, you're on, let's say 90 days, you have your own realization. And that realization is that, wow, life is so much better when you change your relationship with alcohol.
Oh, so that sounds like fun. I don't know, Dee. Do we want to give up alcohol?
Well, I'm sitting here listening to you talk about that. And alcohol, it does become a very social kind of thing. I remember in the days when I used to smoke back in college, and that was sort of a social thing for the girls to go to the smoker and you'd sit and stuff. And I'm thinking, well, I stopped that and life clearly got better after that. But you're right. In your business, I can see, and of course, with me as a physician, it's a little hard that you can't, you know, be drinking all day and stuff like that. But I can see in that situation, businessmen, women go out and alcohol is part of the social scene. You're almost kind of ostracized if you don't drink. Comments are made, you know, what's wrong with you, or, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a couple of things in there. So on the business side of things, I mean, people will not do business with you if you don't drink.
Mm.
Let's not pretend for one second that that doesn't exist out there, because it does.
Right.
And people say, I don't trust him because he doesn't drink. And, oh, don't invite him, her, and let's not be sexist. It's widespread.
Right.
I don't want to invite them because they don't drink. Mm. That is real. And so the when I decided to stop drinking, I thought I was, my boss told me I was committing commercial suicide.
Mm. Oh, wow.
And actually what happened is I grew my business by 50% and reduced my costs by 30%. Now, who doesn't want to do that?
Wow.
Right? So the thing is, I really believed that I would lose my edge as a broker, because I believed that the more I drank, the more successful I would be. And I know there's loads of you guys listening out there will be thinking the same thing. You know, I can't not drink because my customers expect me to. It's how I win that business. It's how I chat to my boss. We go to the pub on a Friday. You know, all of those things.
Uh-huh.
But I can tell you it's not true.
How did you, you said your business got better, but how did you channel your clients, you know, get clients who didn't drink, or if they did drink, you drank juice or did something and it didn't bother the relationship that you were trying to build in the business? So how did that work?
So you've got two ways of doing it. One, you don't tell them and you do stealth drinking. And two, you do tell them, but you do something different. And I'll go into the detail of those. One, stealth drinking. Now, this is actually a specific technique. So our program is about way more than not drinking. Anyone can go out there and not drink.
Mm-hmm.
And what you'll do is you'll ignore all those neural pathways, learning, teaching, etc., and force yourself not to drink. And surely enough, a month later, you'll be straight back to drinking like you were before, thinking, God, that was rubbish. I hated it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas what we do is we get you to rewire your brain so that actually you don't want to drink, that life goals are more important. You feel happier and healthier, and you've replaced all those bad habits with good ones. That's the important part of it. Now, one of the key aspects is stealth drinking I mentioned. So let me give you an example. I want to go out with a customer, and I know he's going to treat me in a different way if I don't drink alcohol. So I arrive at the bar early, having called the bar and warned them that I'm not drinking and finding out what non-alcoholic alternatives they've got. And I go up to the barman, and I tip him 20 quid, and I say, whatever you're serving, you must give me non-alcoholic, but I don't want anyone to know. You might want to tip him more if you want him to be any good. It's up to you.
Oh, wow.
When they're having pints of beer, you get a non-alcoholic beer, pour it into a pint glass, and top it up with lemonade. You can have a gin and tonic without the gin. You know, there's loads of different little alternatives. If somebody buys you a drink, so simple. Have a sip, catch everybody's eye so they see you sipping that alcohol, then go to the toilet, pour it away down the toilet, go back to the bar, buy yourself your fake drink, and come back and join everybody else. And you can get away with a whole evening. And you actually only need to get to the safe zone. And the safe zone is about, depending on who you're with, between 3 and 5 drinks.
Mm.
So once they've had 3 drinks, they won't care anymore and they won't be paying attention. And that's the safe zone. And then you're absolutely clear. The other way around is to actually tell them in advance. And you've got a couple of things to do here. One, call them beforehand and explain to them, look, I'm going for this 90-day challenge. I've got a half marathon at the end of it. I'm really trying to focus. I'm not drinking for the 90 days. I've actually had some things I just need to sort out in my life. You know, I still want to come out tonight. I'm still going to be good fun, but I just want you to support me. Will you be on side? And if you call the ringleader and do that, 9 times out of 10, they'll be on. Hmm. You'll reduce the peer pressure you have because you've called the main guy, the ringleader, and you'll make it much easier for yourself when out there. And the other thing is to mix up your entertaining. So instead of going to, you know, the ski trips are just booze sessions for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, I don't want to do that anymore. So instead, I swapped it with a cycling trip. And I took 20 guys out. We went cycling around Mallorca. There was months beforehand of excitement, of thought, of training, of talking about your stats and your health. The other thing I would do is a spin and steak night. So I'd get about 10 guys together. We'd go for a spin class together, releasing all that dopamine. And then we'd go for a nice steak somewhere. They might have a glass of wine with their steak. I wouldn't.
Oh,
so it's just
okay.
about changing that kind of... that kind of entertaining and the way you do things.
Well, let me tell you, though, when I first looked into your movement and the challenge and I went online and I saw that it was 1 year no beer, I automatically thought, this is a guy thing, you know, because we always think of guys, you know, hanging out, watching the football game.
Drinking beer
and all that. But then, you know, I looked at some of your testimonials that were on the site and saw the women and how they were saying great things. So obviously it's not just for men, but how do you talk to folks and target folks, especially for women, to take this challenge? How do you do that?
So we're actually 50-50 male and female. And when we originally started, we thought, right, first of all, there's a lot there. Okay, I've got to be careful saying a lot. If you search online, there are a few services for women. Women have been thinking about changing their relationship with alcohol way before men have.
Okay.
And so there are different offerings out there. I found nothing for men. So I wanted to aim it at squarely at men.
Okay.
The second thing is, which we realized, we're still 50-50 male and female, is I've got a question. Is Tough Mother male or female or both to you guys?
A Tough Mother?
Yeah.
A little bit of both, huh?
Exactly.
Say a little bit of both.
The girls don't want a pink Tough Mother. They don't want a pink and fluffy. They don't. They want to be to have the tough, and that's what we were aiming for.
Okay.
So we're aiming for that kind of market. We are trying to be very different to everything else out there because we are different.
Yes,
not
it sounds like it.
Not an alcohol support service.
Mm-hmm.
We are not a sit around in a room and talk about the problems in life, although we do have coaching and we do have support networks, massive support network, and we are dealing with a sensitive issue, but we want to talk about it in an aspirational way, a positive way, an exciting way, a way that you can actually say, I'm extremely proud to belong to this tribe, to this community, because it's actually a bunch of people who are trying to live a healthy life.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that sounds great.
So have you found that once people start this, and let's say they do 90 days, I mean, I don't know if you, maybe you can just speak anecdotally, but do most people just stop altogether and they don't ever go back again?
So I don't know about ever, because we haven't been in existence that long. Mm-hmm. We've only been in existence for 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But what I can tell you is that 87% of our members choose to carry on after 90 days.
Wow.
So how many percent?
That is absolutely 87? Massive. 96% said they changed their relationship with alcohol.
Wow.
96, that's
a
lot.
That's significant.
That's very significant.
That is significant. And you said, I think that you said that was 25,000, you've helped 25,000 members in 120 countries.
Yes.
We're nearly 26,000 now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So you guys are doing the do. Tell me, though, because most people are going to say that, especially to us, D and I, because, you know, we go out and we talk about how that, for instance, the Mediterranean diet, you know, how they do the one wine, you know,
a
glass of red wine and how it's good for your heart. Even though there is new research coming out that says that, hold on a minute, maybe that's not significant or true because it affects different people individually. Mm-hmm. But still, most people think, well, shoot, I can have my glass of wine because it's healthy for me. Mm-hmm. So what would be your answer to these kind of folks that are saying that?
Absolutely. So a couple of things is I don't want to get into that argument. I mean, if you were going to pin me down and ask me, I would say that most of the research that says that alcohol is good for you is nonsense. They're adding on the various different ingredients that are involved, but the actual alcohol is one step away from the stuff that you put in your car. It's basically ethanol.
Right,
And so there is no safe limit of putting gasoline down your throat.
Mm. That, exactly.
That's the fact. Mm-hmm. There might be other elements of it in the ingredients. But so let's not get into the health debate, right? That's what everybody else is talking about. Let's talk about involuntary decision to drink alcohol, okay? What we are programmed through all of our life, through all of those trillions of dollars of marketing from the whole of society saying that if you want to have fun, drink. If you want to feel sad, drink. If you're tired, drink. If you want to be productive, drink. If you want to be successful, drink. Mm. And if you want to change that mantra that you've been pre-programmed and rewire your brain so that you can consciously make the decision yourself, then that's what we're talking about. And so for me, I didn't drink anything for 2 years. and now I drink on special occasions. And a special occasion for me might be, you know what, I'm going to go on a lads weekend. I want to fit in. I don't want any. I'm just going to let go. Mm-hmm. I'm going to feel absolutely terrible the week after. My productivity is going to be shot. Mm-hmm. I'm going to feel terrible, miserable in myself. But you know what? I'm going to consciously go in and do that. And how many times do I want to do that in my life? Very, very rarely. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I still do. And that is what our program is about. So our program is about changing your relationship and putting it into a place where you are in control.
Okay.
Now, the thing is that most people go into it mm-hmm. and they say, oh, I think I'll do a 28-day challenge and, you know, then I'll see how I feel. And as I've said, most people end up going to 90 days and choosing to carry on. And that's because we've lifted the lid and we've changed their mindset, and they are now realizing just how damaging alcohol was in their life. But the other bit I add onto that is, if I could have a time machine or a special piece of equipment which could transform every one of you listening right now to a 90-day alcohol-free version of yourself, I absolutely guarantee you, I promise you with every part of my being, that you would choose to do the challenge. It's that simple.
Hmm. Oh, wow. That sounds absolutely exciting, Dee. What
do
you think?
It really does. And, you know, I'm just thinking also that in this country, and I'm sure in the UK, you know, for colleges and universities, this is a huge problem.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even going back to when I was
in
college,
back in Noah's
day. But I remember in those days that, you know, and a lot of kids now, they're breaking away from home, coming out. This is a whole new experience for them. And the drinking thing is a new thing for many of them leaving home, and it gets out of control, and now we're dealing with date rape and kids drinking and dying on campuses from hazing and that kind of thing. So are you targeting some colleges and universities in the UK with respect to this?
Of course, when you know we're an early stage startup, we have massive plans to become a global lifestyle mm-hmm. brand, and we will be getting onto all of those things when the time is right. But the interesting fact is that, you know, we're not just educating our kids about the world, we are training them to become the future alcoholic and I don't believe in alcoholics, the future people with alcoholism or mm-hmm. alcohol problems.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because of the binge drinking culture. And it's the same thing in the military. So the military, whenever they come back off duty, they go to decompression and they're literally just given booze to try and get over, because we don't have a better way of dealing with PTSD and problems and all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
It's completely backwards and it does need to change, but you can't change these things overnight. It takes time. The key part of this program and what makes me so passionate about it is that almost everybody who's been through my program says that they've had an effect on at least one, if not two, people around them. And so when somebody comes to do it, they lead by example, and the people around them make a change as well. Now, pretty much all of my family, my in-laws' family, all of these people, they've either done the challenge, they're doing the challenge, or they've changed their relationship with it. You know, I'm making my family healthier because I'm leading by example. And that's what makes me so excited, because if I can reach a few people, then I can have a massive, massive impact on the world. And that's what's happening.
Tell me then, what are some of the barriers and the pitfalls that you hear from the folks that are going through the challenge? And then what are some of the strategies? I see you said the stealth drinking. So what are some other things that you help people to overcome so they can stay longer on the challenge?
You've got things like withdrawal symptoms. And of course, anybody who's been drinking a large amount should go to their GP prior to taking a challenge of abstinence like this. They should be and just double check that they are okay. When inevitably you've been using a drug for a very long time in your life to make you feel okay, there are long-term negative side effects to that, of like anxiety and depression, and those things will lift. But the chances are things are going to get worse before they get better.
Mm-hmm.
So people can feel sluggish and tired, groggy, very, very grumpy, you know, just not sleeping well. The way to counteract that is to realize that, first of all, the liver is part of the lymphatic system, and the lymphatic system doesn't have a pump. It requires exercise in order for it to flush.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about your liver, the best way for you to flush your liver is to exercise early in the morning, drink a lot of water.
Mm-hmm.
You can try things like milk thistle, and you can take some magnesium, things like that. You need to rest, so get that sleep, exercise early in the morning. Now, the key thing about our program is that day two, we say set yourself a physical challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Exercise is the number one well-being pill out there. You guys know that very well.
Yes.
And it's literally the thing that can change your mental state the fastest.
Yes.
So whilst you are removing this toxic substance from your system, it is very important for you to replace it with good habits. And it also happens that actually coming out of work on a Friday night and feeling, oh God, I need a drink because I want to relax, and going to a spin class right. releases all the chemicals that you used to get in a false way from drinking alcohol. Our program is very much linked with doing some form of exercise, and that also helps with detoxing the body.
Big time, big time. So wow. I think this is awesome. Dee, what do you think?
I think it's great. Rory, I see that one of the things that Vicky mentioned to me as well, that you had an opportunity to ask the Dalai Lama a question. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
That's amazing.
That's a wonderful moment. Tell us about right. it.
It's a pretty incredible moment. A couple of things. One was that I had a PR company, and we invested about £25,000 with the PR company, and they pretty much got us nothing. And I sacked the PR company and went to a coffee shop and sat down, and I sent 10 tweets to journalists copying in a 30-year study which had just been released. And one of those journalists replied back and called me the next day, and all of a sudden, a month later, we had a 10-minute feature on BBC World in over 200 countries every hour.
Wow.
Yeah. And then it was repurposed and put out on BBC Breakfast the following day. And then the following week, it was repurposed again and put out on the BBC News front page. So we had an unbelievable amount of awareness from that. A friend of mine contacted me to come and start working with me, and a very good friend of his, when he was 18 years old, he's now nearly 40. When he was 18 years old, he was picked out of a crowd by the Dalai Lama. He was walking past, and the Dalai Lama picked him out, and they walked side by side together. He didn't really know what was going on, and from then forth, he became the official Dalai Lama photographer.
Okay.
And he is a friend of a friend, and we got back in touch with him, and he said, I'd like to make this happen. So he got in touch with their PR company and explained about what we were up to and the kind of effect that we're having on the world. And there's something really key here. I'm not a Buddhist. I was brought up a Catholic. I kind of believe in all of the religions. I think mm-hmm. inside them all, there is a belief of a higher power. And there is, and often that the message has got misconstrued. And mm-hmm. That's my belief. I always felt inside myself from a very young age, you know, when I was 14 years old, I wrote a letter to Richard Branson, and I said, you know, I'm going to have a big impact on the world, and I'm looking forward to having lunch with you one day. And this moment coming across, all of a sudden being told, yep, he might have time to meet you, flying out to Pisa, I was like, you know, I feel so in line with my destiny here. And I also, what makes me humble is that there's something much greater than me moving through this project.
Yes.
When we arrived, we had no passes.
Okay.
We had no security to be there. We tried to get in three times. We got kicked out three times. Mm. We came back into another, got let in randomly. Next minute, we found ourselves sitting in amongst the monks and journalists and all these people. And right before, all of a sudden, the Dalai Lama pauses the people who are asking questions and says, is anybody in the audience who'd like to ask a question? And my hand goes up quickly, and he catches my eye, and he sends me across.
Okay.
And I come over to the stand. And even when I'm at that stand, I think somebody's going to tap me on the shoulder and say, one of the security guards, what are you doing in here? I told you to get out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Next minute, I'm thinking about the question, and I get up and I stand and I ask the question.
Okay.
Of which he gives me the most incredible answer. You guys have seen it. It was an unbelievable moment. And then from that moment,
yes,
we then got invited to go and see him later, and we actually ended up staying randomly at his hotel that evening.
Mm.
We saw him again the next day. And from that, I've now been invited to go out to the Tibetan colony in India to meet him one-to-one.
Oh, wow. That's significant. So,
it is amazing, and I find it very humbling because I know that what I'm doing is right, and you know, and the not just the message with being him, but he told me so.
Did you have like a spiritual moment? I mean, I'm not Catholic, but the one or two times that I've ever been like in the presence of a cardinal, which is about as close as I'll get to the Pope, for me, it was sort of a spiritual, not that I'm idolizing anybody or anything, but it is sort of a spiritual. Did you have a spiritual moment sort of when you were in his presence?
Yeah, I mean, unbelievably powerful. I was in absolute floods of tears for half an hour after I shook his hand.
Mm.
And there were a series of events like the randomness of getting up to ask that question.
Yes.
You know, that's probably a one in a million chances that could have happened with the succession of events that went on. But the fact we then shook hands later with him and then ended up staying up in his hotel those were now into a billionth of a chance,
mm-hmm.
And that it all came together. And Paolo, who was the official photographer, said the night before, he said, "Rory, you have to understand that things are working much more powerful here. If it is the way, then it will happen. And if it's not, then it won't happen.
Right.
And he will see." And so mm-hmm. it really was a very, very powerful moment. And my publisher, she has met him on a couple of occasions, and she said the first time you meet him, it's a very electric experience. And she had a similar experience.
Mm.
I've always been quite a spiritual person, and I think that helps keeps us grounded.
Right.
Exactly. So kudos to you. You are definitely what we call here at Vicky Doe Fitness, a mover and a shaker. Yes, you are. You're doing it across the world. And so in closing, Rory, could you tell us, tell all the folks today why we should take that 1 year no beer challenge, and then make sure you tell us where we can go sign up so we can do it today?
Absolutely. I just think anybody who is drinking over 14 units, which is about 3 glasses of wine a week, you will have a massive change, and not just from not drinking. So sure, you know, you can absolutely go out there and not drink on your own. That's no problem. But it's a bit like saying you want to get a six-pack and running around in the garden. Or you can come and follow a training plan and a strategy from people who have spent a lot of time with some very, very clever people, the University of East London and the professors of positive psychology, and created a plan which not only helps you stop drinking, but rewires your brain and adds in so much stuff which helps you improve your mental health. And we're having massive transformations. For anyone who's sort of sitting on the fence and considering it, I just say, look, in a whole lifetime of drinking, you know, you could be drinking for 30, 40, 50 years. What is 90 days? And what if I'm right? What if there could be more upside to your life? And it's just going to take you 90 days to find out.
We didn't even mention the health aspects, which is a whole nother conversation for another show, of just, you know, esophageal cancer, breast cancer, and all these other things, throat cancer and all this other stuff, which is a conversation for another event. But we didn't even touch that.
We sort of stay away from that because there's loads of that. That's what the government is saying. And you know what? As far as I'm concerned, I'm probably getting cancer from my shoes. Carrot giving us cancer. I'm like, oh,
go away. You're right. You're right.
So you can find us at 1YearNoBeer, all spelled out, onyearnobeer.com. And you can come and join us on the challenge. It'd be amazing to have you on.
Yes, and we will definitely spread the word. And thank you, Rory,
thank you so much. It's been wonderful. This has been fantastic. I could listen to you all day. You are very, very
inspirational.
Excellent motivational speaker.
Yes.
You have sort of like a Pied Piper effect, if I might say. You know, and I'm sitting here listening and I'm drawn in. And I must admit that I am, you know, I'm inspired by this.
Yes.
So are you lovely ladies going to do the challenge? Are you up for it?
I think I'm up for it.
Quite as it's Kemp, I was telling Dee, because, you know, she trains and so forth. But when we do our training, we actually do, especially if I want to, you know, look right and tight to speaking for the audience, especially since I'm talking about health and wellness.
Right.
I always make sure I do the part. But to make sure that I am how I should look and how I should feel, I do not do my glass of wine. You know, mm-hmm. I stop from having alcohol, and mm-hmm. I've done it as long as 3-4 months, so mm-hmm. I can do it.
And I think another thing that you mentioned that I've just recently started to do, because sometimes, you know, as a physician, your life is very stressful, and although, no, you can't run around drinking alcohol all day on the job, but, you know, there is that propensity to let's go and have a glass of wine after work or something. I've now channeled that into, no, I'm going to the gym.
Yes.
And so I've now converted to being a gym rat and not going to the bar and having a drink. And you, as you said, you feel so much better. You're not putting all that sugar into your body. Your waistline is kind of staying where it's supposed to be. And yeah, maybe one of these days I'd like a 6-pack too. We are always talking about 6-pack abs.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're right. I've started to do that myself. That means that I'm kind of like maybe a teeny bit there, ready to meet that challenge.
Yeah. So, and then I like how you have it where you have it in increments. You have it mm-hmm. like 28 days, 90
right.
days. Yeah. Then next
right.
thing you know, it's a whole year.
And I like the idea of the stealth drinking too, because
yes.
one of the things that I've used, mm-hmm. you know, so that you're not, so if you have a glass with club soda and lemon, nobody really knows what you're drinking.
Right.
Unless they know what you're drinking. That's another sort of one of these kind of things where people aren't going to ask you, well, you know, why aren't you drinking kind of thing? So,
but then sometimes I have a little attitude when people ask me, I'd be like, right, I'm not drinking, so move on.
Exactly. So this has been wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. And any last words?
Yeah, absolutely. Join the free Facebook group, get a taste for it first. But, you know, this is a life-changing challenge, and we've got so much going to happen. 28th of December, our book comes out in the UK. It's currently available to pre-order on Amazon.
Oh, perfect.
And that book will be in the US by spring.
And the name of it is?
The name is the 28-Day Alcohol-Free Challenge.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, good. We'll put that on our site, right, too, as well.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Now, this ends our show, Dee. Do you have some tips that we should think about?
Well, I think it was great. I was impressed by the fact that, you know, a lot of people started out, thought that this was an interesting endeavor to do, but ended up finding that they felt so much better without drinking alcohol that they continued to do it for a much longer period of time than a year. And also the issue of still, you know, nobody wants to stick out like a sore thumb.
Nobody wants
to say, well, why aren't you drinking? And,
yeah,
you know, what's wrong with you? So he gave us a lot of tips about stealth drinking.
Yes,
so
I love it.
So that you don't seem like you're an outlier when you're out with your friends and, you know, nobody will ask you any questions and you can just keep it moving.
You can keep it moving. I like that.
I did too.
I liked it. And, you know, I also love that, yes, we're going to emphasize the health aspects of not drinking and so forth, because there are definitely health benefits. But I like how he was really focusing on how that we really get a chance to make friendship and develop relationships.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, because think about it, you know, if you're forced not to go out after work and drink, but now you're going and doing some type of activity like exercise,
right,
and stuff like that, you're being creative. You're
right.
Being creative.
Because it was affecting his marriage,
uh-huh,
you know,
yes,
as well. So, you know, just like you say, relationships and having healthier relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So
kudos to him.
Kudos to him.
And I'm so glad that he came to our show.
Yeah, me
all
too.
The way across
the pond.
So I'm going to take the challenge. You taking the challenge?
I think I'm going to take the challenge too.
I'm going to start out, you know, small with the 28 days.
Yeah. I want to take the challenge too. Because mm-hmm. like you say, I just think about the sugar that you're taking in, you know, and it's mm-hmm. all about minimizing sugar throughout with me. I just, you know, I think sugar's killing us.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And the alcohol itself, ethanol.
Yeah.
Can do big time damage.
That was another thing that he said. Just remember, this is ethanol.
Yes.
You know, this is ethanol. Like when we write notes in the patient's chart, we abbreviate it by ETOH, mm-hmm. which is the chemistry name for ethanol.
I know. And so you drinking and guzzling.
That's what you're pouring it down your throat.
That's actually poison, right?
Right.
That's actually poison. So yes, we're going to give up the poison for a little bit.
Absolutely.
And join the challenge. So I want all of you guys to go look up the website, 1 year no beer, and join us and take the challenge. Join us and take the challenge. And as always, for more information, go to our website, www.vickidofitness.com. And remember, if you have any questions, comments, or just something to say, tweet us, email us, go on Facebook, and share with us your thoughts.
You've been listening to It's All About Health and Fitness with Dr. Vicki Hayward-Doe and Dr. Virginia Banks Bright. Vicki Doe is owner of Vicki Doe Fitness, a multimedia health and wellness forum, a place to discuss, learn, and participate in healthy living. You can get in touch with Vicki by email at info@vickidofitness.com.